All right, so I'll stand. I'll read a verse. It's one verse. Jude 1, verse 4. And there are certain men crept in unawares, who were before of old ordained to this condemnation, ungodly men, turning the grace of God into lasciviousness, and denying the only Lord God and our Lord Jesus Christ. You may be seated. Pastor Mark used a scripture in his sermon last week, and I thought that it would also fit into my sermon today. Who are these ungodly men who crept in unawares? The past couple of weeks have been a hodgepodge of very curious events that have occurred. Every one of Trump's moves is countered by another move by the liberal or progressive opposition. For example, Trump made an executive order related to cutting back on abortions. Quickly, the opposition had 500,000 women marching in Washington, D.C., wearing sexual parts on their heads as hats. Nasty Ashley Judd and Blow Up the White House Madonna were the star speakers. And on television was the infamous Jew, Nancy Pelosi, with a town hall show discussing the opposition of Trump challenging a woman's choice and murdering her child that is still alive in her womb. She gave her views on questions that were prearranged for her, and she gave her liberal answers. Keep in mind that she is a Jewish multimillionaire. She argued in favor of the woman's choice to murder her own child. She was against anything that was taught to us in the Bible. There have been 60 million or so babies murdered in the womb since Roe versus Wade was passed 50 years ago. Planned Parenthood started after the law was passed, and that organization was led by Margaret Sanger, one of the Jewish leaders. Trump had made an executive order which would slash the federal payments to the main abortion clinic in the nation. This policy change has set off a multitude of protests against Trump and his agenda. Then there was Trump's move against the refugees from seven countries. It was a ban on their arriving here for 90 days. The seven countries were mostly Muslim countries. There were marches everywhere. In one university, Berkeley of California, the march led to a riot after a gay conservative was forbidden to speak at the School of Higher Learning. Burning cars, broken windows, and all other kinds of disruptions were carried out at the university. And who was on television that night? Chuck Schumer, the infamous Jewish congressman. He gave his liberal opinion of what was going on to the televised world. Keep in mind that he is a Jewish multimillionaire. He was in favor of the rioters who refused the speaker the right to even speak. They said it was wrong for anyone to speak on any racist, bigoted subjects. So much for free speech. It is ironic that Berkeley is the university that championed free speech several years ago. And now they are for the opposite position. And it's also very ironic that when President Bill Clinton spoke against illegal immigration in 1995, both sides of Congress gave him a standing ovation. He and Trump said about the same thing. Then why are they now against Trump? So much for the facts. Then there was the Super Bowl. Mark told about this in his last sermon. He especially talked about Lady Gaga, who was part of the Illuminati halftime show. It was the Jewish singer Stephanie Joanne Angelina Germata, a.k.a. as Lady Gaga, who was the main performer. What a show that was. From Katy Perry to Beyoncé to Britney Spears to Madonna, what a conglomeration of stars who have sold their souls to the devil, who have been chosen by the forces of evil to perform the halftime show. Keep in mind that Lady Gaga is a Jewish multi-millionaire. As Lady Gaga sang, a reddish hell-like fire consumes the stage around her, from which red-colored horns of the owl symbolism are repeated throughout. As fans celebrate Lady Gaga's demonic performance, they are awash in blood-red lightning, providing the camera a scene that's framed to show masses of hell's minion with the horned owl symbols in plain view, worshiping the Gaga goddess, the puppet of Satan, as she flies through the air with witch-like powers. Lady Gaga's blood-red stage with dancers dressed in white psych ward outfits, while it's all sponsored by the Pepsi logo. Pepsi used aborted fetus cells in its soda flavoring research. The whole purpose is to eventually achieve the deep poisoning of the human psyche, that mindless mobs of obedient human slaves will literally bow down before Satan and worship his agenda as it's rolled out on these halftime shows. Then there's a story that comes from Whitefish, Montana. It seemed that the mother of a white supremacist national leader was targeted by real estate Jews to sell her property in the town. This made other white supremacists mad, and they began an attack on Jews and a local group that promotes diversity called Love Lives Here. The Jews countered this movement by the white supremacists by having the Orthodox Jewish rabbis say that they were sending their Jewish students to visit the Auschwitz concentration camp and by mailing a Torah to every Jewish family in the state. In addition, a delegation of rabbis from Canada and across the United States presented Montana Governor Steve Bullock with a copy of the Talmud and thanked him for defending the state's Jewish residents. I hope the Talmud is written in English and the governor reads it. Maybe he will repent. Have you ever wondered why the television networks always have on a Jewish expert to criticize something that has happened in the United States? Why is it practically always Jews? Isn't a Protestant good enough to give his opinion? What about a Baptist or a Presbyterian or a Methodist? I thought that the Jews made up a small part of the population of the United States. After every presidential speech or major event, there is a David Axelrod or Rahm Emanuel or Chuck Schumer or Nancy Pelosi or other Jewish commentators giving their liberal views that are very anti-Christian. And many of these political leaders have dual citizenships, both with the United States and Israel. They should be told that they are not allowed to hold office if they hold two or more citizenships with other countries, for it makes them biased towards the countries with which they hold citizenship. In other words, they shouldn't be allowed to hold office or vote either. Many of these Jewish leaders preach a different gospel to the United States television audience than they do to their own Israelite people. For example, the Edom Ashkenazi Jews preach the gospel of a diverse and borderless world under free market universalism to the goyim of the United States and elsewhere. While back in the Jewish state, they preach the exact opposite, nationalism and the Zionist dominion. How many refugees and people with different culture values are accepted into the Jewish state? In fact, if you preach the gospel of the kingdom to any Jew who lives in the Israelite state, you can experience some jail time there. Why are the Jewish people so double-minded on many of the issues that are destroying us in the United States? Have you ever wondered, how did it get this way? How did gays become one of the most protected peoples on the stage of life? How did illegal immigrants become so popular in the land of legal immigrants? How did the legal system have a bias against the victims of a crime? How did drinking and recreational drugs become so highly promoted in this nation? How did sexual deviance in society become systematically promoted? How did so many of the population become dependent on state benefits? How did the media become so controlled and dumbed down? How was their all-out attack on Christianity and the emptying of churches? There's nothing that happens unless it is first planned. Well, who planned this? If you are a member of a Judeo-Christian church, do you know that the name of your organization is an oxymoron? A contradiction in terms, given that Judaism and Christianity are at opposite ends of the religious spectrum. Since most Jews are actively hostile to Christianity, and since Talmudic Jews take pleasure in the thought of Christ being boiled in increment in hell now, to speak of the Judeo-Christian legacy is clearly nonsensical. Where does all this come from? Let's go back to the Weimar Republic of Germany. It lasted about 14 years from the end of World War I to 1933. The Republic was created by the Versailles Peace Treaty, which had in its tenets about 80% Jews who were there determining the elimination of old countries and the formation of new ones. The Weimar Republic of Germany was one of the new governments that was formulated. Do you think that the Weimar Republic was pro or anti-Jewish? It was pro-Jewish. Germany had a very, very high inflation rate, very high unemployment rate, along with a decline in the morals of the nation. It was basically a Jewish-run government with many Jews in leadership positions. But the Germans found out about the extreme Jewish influence on their nation and how the Jews betrayed Germany into a defeat in World War I. That awareness changed the Germans' thinking drastically. They became very anti-Jewish, and they did what their ancestors had done. They kicked them out of their country. In other words, Germany woke up. Let's stop right here and think about what happened in Germany. They were living under a Jewish-run government that was very favorable to the Jews. The Germans discovered all the evil things that the Jews had done to them, especially over the previous 25 years. The United States government is now run by Jews. What if America wakes up as to what the Jews have been doing to us over the last 100 years? For example, we learn how the Jews got the first Jewish Supreme Court justice on the United States Supreme Court. There are now three. Got the United States to fight on the side of the Jewish Allied powers in World War I. How they got the United States to agree with the Jewish Versailles Treaty that ended World War I. Got the United States to fight on the side of the Jewish Allied powers in World War II. How they got the United States to agree to carve up the map in Europe at the end of World War II. Got the United States to get rid of its Christian patriarchal society and replace it with its Jewish matriarchal society. Got the United States to create racial offenses and hate speech laws. This is especially true if one is anti-Jewish and not anti-Christian. Got the United States to create confusion in its school curricula. Got the United States to corrupt their school system by exposing the students to sexual situations in the classroom. The parents no longer are the teacher of the students. Got the United States to agree to huge foreign immigration to destroy national identity and foment future race wars. Got the United States to systematically promote excessive drinking and recreational drugs. Got the United States to promote sexual deviance in society. Got the United States to have an unreliable legal system that focuses on the bias against the victims of crime. Got the United States to be numb about many of its people being dependent on state benefits. Got the United States to be under the control of a dumbed-down media. Got the United States to be unknowingly encouraging the breakdown of the family. Got the United States to support an all-out attack on Christianity and the emptying of mainstream churches. Got the United States to believe that 9/11 was a job that was carried out by Muslim terrorist groups and not the Jewish Mossad and the inner United States government. Remember that there was a 47-story tall building that fell in 6.5 seconds that afternoon. Got the United States to believe that there were a whole lot of children who were shot by a lone wolf person, or was it his brother, who shot the children at least 3 to 11 times with 4 different guns and murdered his mother, who taught the school. No, she was just a substitute teacher. No, she did not have anything to do with the school. Case gives me a big headache. And so on and so on. What if America found out about these cases? What would she do? I think it'd be very close to what Germany did in the 1930s. Germany discovered what many nations had discovered over the centuries before them. With Jews, we lose. Martin Luther, the Protestant Reformation leader, had written the book, The Jews and Their Lies, where he denounced this generation of vipers. What happened to that book? Even most Lutherans are ignorant of the fact that the leader of their own denomination wrote it. The Germans had been very kind to the Jews in the year 1905 when they let into their nation many Jewish refugees from the failed communist revolution in Russia. Most of the rest of Europe refused the Jews any entrance. But Germany let them in and was very generous to them, allowing them to do many of the things that they wanted to do. The Jews felt very safe. But Germany finally realized that they had come up with a solution about the Jews, and their solution was to get rid of them. They came to the same conclusion that many of the nations of Europe had come to. Remember, England had kicked the Jews out of their country from 1290 to 1650. That is a period of 360 years. The German Nazi government told the Jews to get rid of their usurious banks, to get rid of their holding political office and voting, get rid of their holding any ownership in any newspapers and radio, and 90% of the Jews left Germany after the Nazis rejected the world's Jewish request to restore the Jews to their former positions. Germany would not restore the Jews. They told the Jews their solution stood. Jews, get out. World Jewry was very upset at the Nazis. They demanded that Germany restore the Jews to their former position and end the threat of losing their ability to hold an office or to vote. When that failed, World Jewry did the next best thing for them to do. They declared war against Germany. They did this in 1933 when Hitler became Chancellor of Germany. They began by trying to destroy Germany's economy. They boycotted all German goods in any land where the Jews lived, which, of course, included America. Now I'll show you the newspaper from March 24, 1933. This is 1933. When's the war start? 1939. Judea declares war on Germany. Jews of all the world unite in action. Now there's 600,000 Jews in Germany. They're at war with Germany. What if the Jews declared war on the United States? What would you do with the Jews in the United States? They're declared war against you. Now there's an article over here, Boycott of German Goods. You see this article? I'm going to read you what's in this little paragraph here. You can't see it on the board. All Israel is uniting in wrath against the Nazi onslaught on the Jews in Germany. This is 1933. Is the Holocaust, any Holocaust started? No. Is united in wrath against the Nazi onslaught on the Jews in Germany. It then goes on and says, Adolf Hitler, swept into power by appeal to elemental patriotism, is making history of a kind he least expected, seeking to unite only the German nation to race consciousness. He has roused the whole Jewish people to a national renaissance. The appearance of the swastika symbol of the new Germany has called forth the Lion of Judah, the old battle symbol of Jewish defiance. 14 million Jews, dispersed throughout the world, have banded together as one man to declare war on the German persecutors of their co-religionists. Sectional differences and antagonisms have been submerged into one common aim: to stand by the 600,000 Jews of Germany who are terrorized by the Hitlerist anti-Semitism, and to compel fascist Germany to end its campaign of violence and suppression directed against the Jewish minority. World Jewry has made up its mind not to rest quiescent in face of this revival of medieval Jew baiting. Unquote.
Whoa.
I must add a point of discussion of the fact that the article said there were 14 million Jews in the world at this time. This was in 1933. Now, I'm a math teacher. They claim that the Holocaust killed 6 million of the 14 million Jews. So, let's see, 14 million minus 6 million would leave 8 million. Plus all the Jews who died in the war effort, especially in Russia. It is estimated that 2 million other Jews died outside of the Holocaust. So 14 minus 6 is 8. 8 minus 2 million is 6 million. That'd be 6 million Jews alive in 1945. Is that correct? Did I subtract right? They would have lost over half their population. But they didn't. The population remained stable. The Jews were incensed that Germany would stand up to the Jews. The Jews said that Germany would pay big time for their actions. The Jews would never forget. They would twist the events around so that the world in a couple of generations would believe it was Germany that declared war against most of the world. And when they add the lie that if they were not defeated, they would have conquered the world. Remember, the Jews declared war against Germany in 1933. This is before any Holocaust. Concentration camps were not even in existence. This is before Germany annexed the Rhineland. This is before Germany annexed Austria. This is before Germany annexed Sunderland. This is before Germany invaded Poland. In fact, it was 6 years before any other country declared war on Germany. Now, the communist intellectuals set up shop. Beginning shortly after World War I, a small group of Soviet communist intellectuals set up shop in Frankfurt, Germany. This small group were academic Marxist philosophers that came together in Germany between World War I and World War II. It was called the Frankfurt School. It was started during the Weimar Republic. But they were smart enough to know that their cultural Marxist approach would not have any influence in the anti-communistic Nazi Germany. Nazism hated the communists with an intense hatred. So when Hitler was voted in as Chancellor of the Nazis, the communist philosophers fled Germany. So the Frankfurt School died in Germany, but it continued its influence in the nation that they went to. Where did they go? They came to America in 1933. America is the home to any person of any belief. We are the melting pot of the world. The communist belief in the 1920s was shattered. It was because they had believed that immediately following the Bolshevik Revolution in 1917 in Russia, that a workers' revolution would sweep into Europe and eventually into the United States. All the workers, instead of the middle and lower class men fighting each other in a world war, would rise up and revolt against their countries. The World War came, but communism didn't sweep Europe and the United States. It failed to happen. Why? Toward the end of 1922, the communists of the world began to consider the reason for this failure. The meeting was held at the Marx Engels, both Jews, Institute, Moscow, Russia. The aim of the meeting was to focus on Marx's cultural revolution and instead of the failed economic revolution. One of the first presentators was George Lucas, a Jewish Hungarian aristocrat and son of a banker. He had become a communist during World War I. He talked about his development of the idea of revolution and eros, using the sexual instinct as an instrument of destruction. Also, another contributor to this meeting was Willy Munzenberg. He was another revolutionary Jew who proposed solution to the problems besetting society was to organize the intellectuals and use them to make Western civilization stink. Only then, after they have corrupted all its values and made life impossible, can we, the Jews, impose the dictatorship of the proletariat, the Antichrist. This meeting, held in 1922, was proclaimed by many attending as being a meeting more harmful to Western society than the Bolshevik Revolution itself. If that last sentence is true, why is it that very few Americans have ever heard of that event? What happened to this meeting? Where did all these communists go? In 1923, the Institute of Social Research had been officially established and funded by Felix Weil. Weil was born in Argentina into a wealthy Jewish family, was sent to attend school in Germany at the age of 9. He attended universities in Tübingen and Frankfurt, where he graduated with a doctoral degree in political science. While at these universities, he became increasingly interested in socialism and Marxism. In the summer of 1924, Lucas moved to Germany from Hungary. While he was in Germany, he chaired the first meeting of a group of communist-oriented socialists. This gathering was to lead to the foundation of the Frankfurt School. Karl Grunberg, the Institute's Jewish director from 1923 to 1929, was an avowed Marxist, although the Institute did not have any official party affiliations. But in 1930, Marx Hornheimer, also Jewish, assumed control. He believed that Marx's theory should be the basis of the Institute's research. In 1930, the school changed course under new director Marx Hoxheimer. The team began mixing the ideas of Sigmund Freud, another Jew, with those of Karl Marx, a Jew, and cultural Marxism was born. In classical Marxism, the workers of the world were oppressed by the ruling classes. The new theory was that everyone in society was psychologically oppressed by the institutions of Western culture. The school concluded that this new focus would need new vanguards to spur the change. The workers were not able to rise on their own. But Hitler came into power, and the conditions in Germany were no longer safe for these budding communists. So the school was reborn at Columbia University, and its members began to exert their Jewish ideas on American culture. Their theory of attack on Western civilization was simple. Criticize every pillar of Western culture. Criticize the family. Criticize democracy. Criticize common law. Criticize freedom of speech and others. The hope is these pillars would crumble under the pressure. Next was a book that Theodore Adorno co-authored, The Authoritarian Personality. It redefined traditional views on gender roles and sexual mores as prejudiced. The school splits society into two main groups, the oppressors and the victims. They argued that history and reality were shaped by those groups who controlled traditional institutions. At the time, that was a code for the males of European descent. When World War II ended, Ardono and Horkheimer returned to Germany. Herbert Marcuse stayed in America. In 1955, he published his Eros and Civilization. This book would become very influential in shaping the sexual revolution of the 1960s. And Marcuse provided the answer to the question that the school asked in the 1930s. Who would replace the working class as the new vanguards of the Marxist revolution? The answer? It would be the victim coalition of minorities, blacks, women, and homosexuals. The social movement of the 1960s, black power, feminism, gay rights, sexual liberation gave Marcuse a unique vehicle to release cultural Marxist ideas into the mainstream, railing against all things establishment. The Frankfurt School ideas caught on like wildfire across American universities. But when Hitler came to power, the Institute was closed and its members by various routes fled to the United States and ended up as academics at major United States universities, Columbia, Princeton, Brandeis, and California at Berkeley. California at Berkeley. Now I understand why the riots were at that particular college in California. It's been communistic for almost 100 years. Now I know why Obama was said to be a student at Columbia, even though no one knew him why he was there. It, too, is a communist school. The Southern Poverty Law Center, at their website, puts forth this in an effort to discredit the view that the Frankfurt School was a communistic influence here in the United States. I'm quoting from their website. In a nutshell, the theory posits that a tiny group of Jewish philosophers who fled Germany in the 1930s and set up shop at Columbia University in New York City devised an unorthodox form of Marxism that took aim at America's society's culture rather than its economic system, unquote. The Southern Poverty Law Center calls it a theory. What's the theory? What they say is a fact. It was Jewish philosophers who came to New York City from Germany in the 1930s and set up shop in Columbia University. From there, they took aim at America's culture, not our economics. The communists at Columbia University were attempting to demolish the established order from within. So-called reforms had to be made slowly and subtly so that these changes for the worse were barely perceptible. The school saw the undermining of the social order as a long-term project. One of their projects was a systematic erosion of Christian moral values and the promotion of sexual perversion. This is known as cultural Marxism. Cultural Marxism is directly opposed to the behavior of a true Christian following the law of God. Today, thanks to the efforts of organized Jewry, which controls 96% of the world's media, cultural Marxism has largely triumphed over Christianity, and Christianity lies in ruins. To many dispassionate observers, society has now reached the rock bottom in moral values, and the Frankfurt School that started in America, Columbia University, is very happy at this result. The school included among its members Herbert Marcuse, the 1960 guru of the New Left, denounced by Pope Paul VI for his theory of liberation, which opens the way for sexual license cloaked as liberty. Max Horkheimer, Theodore Adorno, the popular writer Eric Fromm, Leo Löwenthal, and Jürgen Habermas. All these individuals, except Habermas, were of Jewish origin. My conclusion. We fought on the wrong side in World War I and II. Isn't that what conclusion General Patton came to before he was killed in the hospital after his Jeep wrecked? We fought the wrong people. It seems like anyone who comes to this view is eliminated. Why? Senator Joseph McCarthy is made out to be a lonesome idiot for trying to rid the nation of all its communists. Was he right or wrong? He is now depicted as being wrong. He is said to have wrongly tried to bring charges against many people who were not communists. We have the term McCarthyism, which refers to Joseph McCarthy and its commonly understood meaning of reckless and unsubstantial accusations of public attacks against communist spies who he alleged were the United States federal government. During the late 1940s and early 1950s, the prospect of communist subversion at home and abroad seemed frighteningly real to many people in the United States. These fears came to define and in some cases corrode the era's political cultures. For many Americans, the most enduring symbol of the Red Scare was Republican Senator Joseph McCarthy of Wisconsin. Senator McCarthy spent almost 5 years trying in vain to expose communists and other left-wing loyalty risk in the United States government and the hyper-suspicious atmosphere of the Cold War, and insinuations of disloyalty were enough to convince many Americans that their government was packed with traitors and spies. McCarthy's accusation was so intimidating that few people dared to speak out against him. It was not until he attacked the Army in 1954 that his action earned him the censure of the United States Senate. Joseph McCarthy said in a speech, "When a great democracy is destroyed, it will not be because of enemies from without, but rather because of enemies from within." The Jews showed instant hostility towards anyone who interfered with their campaign of vengeance against the conquered Germans. And so they began turning their big guns in the media against McCarthy. A December 1949 poll of news correspondents covering the United States Senate already had branded McCarthy the worst senator. A high honor indeed. President General Eisenhower had his press secretary convey to the media a statement that likened McCarthy to Hitler, a comparison that was not meant to flatter McCarthy. Everard Murrow and other media figures took their cue and began echoing that line. Now, Eisenhower had been responsible for deliberately starving to death over 1 million German prisoners of war. And that was the same Eisenhower who later sent paratroopers into Little Rock to enforce racial integration with bayonets. The masters of the controlled media were determined to get McCarthy, and they did. They had not directed as much hatred on any public figure since Adolf Hitler. After World War II ended, the Illuminati needed to create the bogus Cold War to justify the arms race and the national security state, just as the war on terror replaces the Cold War today. The problem was that communism could be traced back to the Illuminati Jewish bankers. Most communist spies were Jewish, and the Soviet communism was Illuminati Jewish. They used McCarthy to fuel Cold War hysteria by de-emphasizing the role Jews played as agents or dupes for the Illuminati bankers. The Frankfurt School later obtained another person who was loyal to its cultural Marxism. His name was Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky arrived on the scene in Chicago with the tactical tools for the foot soldiers of social and political revolution. The community organizers and non-academic labor and single-issue activists. Alinsky's handbook, Rules for Radicals, first published in 1971, included an admiration for the Prince of Darkness, Lucifer, noting that he was, quote, the first radical known to man who rebelled against the establishment and did it so effectively that he at least won his own kingdom, unquote. The fact that Lucifer rebelled against the establishment of God's kingdom is omitted, and Lucifer's final place of complete defeat is also omitted by Alinsky. By the 1960s, Marcuse and Alinsky were recognized as two of the most influential leaders of the New Left, which gained strength in numbers by taking a leading role in the anti-Vietnam War movements. Alinsky succeeded in what would be a crowning achievement, the recruitment of young, idealistic radicals, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, who would go on to climb to the top of political power in the Democratic Party. Hillary wrote her senior thesis at Wesley College in 1969 on Alinsky's methods and remained a friend of Alinsky until his death in 1972. A decade later, Barack Obama was trained in the methods set forth by the Rules for Radicals as a community organizer. One of Alinsky's contributions, explained as the seventh rule for radicals, was the tactic to avoid debate on the issues by systematically silencing, ridiculing, and marginalizing people of opposing views. At the same time, allies in the media provided cover and a framework of acceptance for racial radical issues and leadership. Traditional values of morality, family, the work ethic, and free market institutions were made to appear outdated, even reactionary, unnecessary, and culturally unfashionable. Ultimately, this evolved and became known as political correctness. By the 1980s, the countercultural alliances would include radical feminist groups, civil rights and ethnic minority advocates, extremist environmental organizations, and advocates of liberation theology, anti-military peace groups, union leaders, radical legal activist organizations like the ACLU, human rights watchdog organization, community organizers of the Alinsky model, National and World Church Council bureaucracies, anti-corporate activists, and various internationally minded groups. The Frankfurt School taught integration of the Western civilization's institutions. They would have their people go into the targeted organizations and lead in the criticism of it for the purpose to eventually get rid of them or change them, that organization. What about the churches? Can anyone at any time come and worship and be part of the congregation? If this is true, then watch out. You're promising worshiping with a goat, dog, or even a viper, or even a wolf. Your church will soon be emptied. Blessed be the Lord God of Israel, to be continued.